I'm Tom Hall. This is Midday. My guest today, the interim superintendent of schools in Baltimore County, Verlita White. Last month, the county school board appointed Ms. White as the permanent superintendent, but that decision was overruled by the state school superintendent, Karen Salmon. Baltimore County is still reeling from the ethics scandal that led to a jail sentence for the previous superintendent. What are the consequences of the continuing drama surrounding his successor on the state's third largest school district? Verlita White joins me today in Studio A. Plus, there's some drama with the leadership of Baltimore City and Prince George's County schools, too. We'll have analysis by Baltimore Sun education reporter Liz Bowie. Turmoil at the top of local schools. That's next on Midday, right after the news. Good afternoon, everybody. It's Midday. Thanks for being with us. I'm Tom Hall. My guest today is Verlita White, the interim superintendent of the Baltimore County Schools. She was appointed last July following the resignation of Dallas Dance. Dr. Dance is currently in jail, serving 6 months for perjury after failing to report outside income while he was the county's superintendent. Verlita White has deep ties to the county. She was a student, a teacher, and an administrator in the county schools. Last month, by a vote of 8-4, the board appointed Ms. White the permanent superintendent. Then, in a highly unusual move, that appointment was put on hold by the state school superintendent, Karen Salmon, who cited ethical concerns about Ms. White, suggesting that she should not be appointed to the position permanently until an audit of the school's contracts is completed. Supporters of Ms. White call that decision politically motivated. Kevin Kamenetz, the outgoing county executive who's running in the Democratic primary for governor, has singled out Governor Larry Hogan in particular. The governor has said he was not involved in this decision. The Baltimore Sun and others have reported that three members of the school board who opposed Ms. White's permanent appointment as superintendent themselves asked Karen Salmon to disallow it. Other board members have complained that Dr. Salmon did not consult with anyone on the board before making her decision. Meanwhile, the school board itself is due for an overhaul in November, when county voters will, for the first time, elect seven of its members, which are currently appointed by the governor. The county school board is meeting tonight, and Ms. White's future will be the major topic on the agenda. Ms. White's schedule today allows her to be with us for the first half of the show. We are streaming on the WIPR Facebook page. You're welcome to join us there. And Verlita White, it's terrific to meet you.
Thank you. Good to meet you.
And thank you for coming in. I know it's a very busy day.
Thank you for having me.
It was an unprecedented and very unusual decision by Superintendent Salmon to overrule the local school board here in Baltimore County concerning your appointment. And it was also a highly unusual move on your part to allow the release of a report that the Board of Education's Ethics Committee wrote to address the concerns of any ethical violations. Why did you make that decision? What did you hope to accomplish?
Well, thank you for the question. It's a good question. And some had wondered why I didn't release it even sooner. And that really has to do with, it is a confidential personnel matter, as you know. And so we just wanted to make sure that we are honoring that and not setting a precedent, not only for myself, but for other superintendents. But it had come to a point where I wanted to remove the mystery behind the ethics report and wanted to show that there's no there. And so I just wanted to be able to clear the record and make sure that the public has full faith and trust in my abilities and to see exactly what the ethics panel said about those technical violations, as they call them, in the report. So I released it for the public and for the sake of transparency.
And the concerns in large measure this company called ERDI, sure, which is a consulting company, as I understand it. Yes. Does ERDI now, or has it ever had direct business with the county?
No, never. And so I think that that was the point of confusion for me, because I had always believed, and based on some of the instructions that I read, the point of disclosure was to disclose if you were doing business with a corporation that was also doing business with the Board of Education. And given that ERDI does not do business with the Board of Education, I didn't realize that I needed to place that there. Certainly now, after months later, I realize that the instructions page said something other than what the schedule said on the actual form, and so I have since amended that.
And you've amended the form.
Yes.
And there are people, and I suppose it's understandable, who, given the fact that Dallas Dance was convicted of lying about his rather lengthy cooperation and employment by several companies, including this one, ERDI, to the tune of some $147,000, which greatly dwarfs the amount of money that you receive from this company, which, as I understand, is about $13,000. But people equated those two things. They said, well, Dallas Dance was cooking the books, and here we have another person, same company. It seems to be a problem. How do you respond to that?
Yeah, and I could understand the confusion. I would ask the general public to think about intention, because I think that intention matters. And so in my case, when it comes to, I said that I should have placed ERDI on the form after getting guidance on that, and I did. And I amended the form, and so even if you look at my disclosure form today, we had disclosure forms that were due on April 30th, and even the floral arrangements that I received back in July when I became interim superintendent, all of those sentiments and congratulatory sentiments, well, I thought to myself, I don't know exactly the value of those floral arrangements, but I put those down as well. There is no way to necessarily equate the two. I think that you have to look at the intention. There was no intention on my part to mislead the public. There was no intention on my part to do anything wrong. And so I think that once you read the ethics report, that's very clear. And it was very clear to the ethics panel. It was very clear to our Board of Education. And it's also very clear to me that there was no intention of wrongdoing.
And the Ethics Committee has issued a remedy as part of their report, which you have agreed fully with. You've said you're no longer going to have anything to do as a consultant with this company.
Yes.
You're not going to take any outside consulting fees if you are the superintendent.
Sure.
And as we said, you've amended your form. The board has several options. We mentioned that they're going to meet tonight. They could ask the state superintendent, Dr. Salmon, to reconsider her decision. They could appoint you for another year as an interim person and restart the national search that they said they were going to start a few weeks ago. They could, decide, for example, as some have suggested, to wait until November, when these new school board members will be elected for the first time, no longer fully appointed by the governor, and then figure out what to do then. Has the board signaled to you if there is any consensus about what they should do and what they will do tonight?
That is the question of the day that I've received already multiple times today, and there really isn't. In terms of anything, there hasn't been a conversation between myself and members of the board, but I have to say this, that I fully believe that all of our board members have the best interest of the school system at heart, and I believe that they care very, very deeply, and they are taking these decisions very, very seriously as well. So I have full faith and confidence that they will make the best decision for our school system. I know these folks personally, I know them professionally, and I know that they have the heart and soul for children. So I just believe that they will make a decision that is best for the school system.
What do you want them to do?
Well, my focus...
What's best outcome for you tomorrow morning?
Well, it's not just about me, right? So when I talk about keeping my eye on the permanent superintendency, that's for a reason. It's not just about me and for what my desire is. It's never been my desire to reach necessarily for that. You know, people say, well, isn't that the golden ring that you've been reaching for all along? Well, that my job has been to teach children, to serve children well all throughout my career. So it's really about continuity and consistency for our school system. Like you announced in your opening, our school system is about to undergo a major shift in leadership. in mid-year. So in December, we will have pretty much a new school board and Board of Education.
Yes, we understand that only two of the current members are even standing for election.
Absolutely. So with that comes the continuity of instruction, the continuity of the structure of our system. And so we want to make sure that we have consistency. There are lots of, I would say, obstacles and challenges when it comes to an interim. Sometimes people will ask me, well, why is an interim, why is that a problem? And it's not necessarily a problem, but it's one that we really have to consider some of the other implications and ramifications. For instance, recruitment. It's hard to recruit high-quality talent when there's uncertainty at the top of the organization. Retention.
Talking about recruitment of teachers and
administrators. The retention of teachers and administrators. We have several teachers and administrators who are eligible for retirement, who want to know that there's some continuity and consistency. With the system being in flux, they're more likely then to choose retirement, and we need to retain that high-quality talent. The structure of the organization. How do we make sure that we have a sound structure, an organizational structure? How do we make any changes that would be really presumptuous of any interim, given that the permanent superintendency is still in flux? So there are multiple things to consider when you're thinking about an interim versus a permanent superintendency.
The letter from State Superintendent Karen Salmon, which I note has a few typos in it, or just bad yes. facts in it, which is pretty sloppy, I think. But she talks about a breach of trust having to do with these, what the County Ethics Committee, Board of Education Ethics Committee has referred to as technical violations, which, as we mentioned, you have done your best to address. But she seems very concerned, as do those who oppose your appointment permanently, to the completion of an audit. Right? Your response to that, the importance of the audit, why hasn't the audit been undertaken already? Why is it taking so long? I mean, Mr. Dance pled guilty to his perjury charge, some months ago. What will this audit show? What will this audit demonstrate?
Well, I think that it's important for us to kind of go back a little bit for me to answer that question. I think that when it comes to trust, I've said that trust can only be established or reestablished through repeated kind of ongoing relationships, conversations, and kept promises. So let's talk about that in terms of trust. For instance, you mentioned the trust related to ERDI. ERDI has always been a part of my resume, has always been a part of the conversations with the board. This is not something that was revealed after the fact. It was something that was on my curriculum vitae even before I applied for the job or when I applied for the job. So that's one avenue of trust. When it comes to the audit was one that I called for, not that the board called for initially. I called for the audit September 26. School didn't even start until September 5th. So early on, I called for an independent audit so that there would be full faith and trust in the school system and in our procurement practices.
And this audit's going to take a look at the procurement and find out whether or not under Dr. Dance's tenure or perhaps even your own, contracts were offered or vendors were dealt with who had some sort of financial interest with people on the board or either you or Dr. Dance.
Well, the audit has always been the focus on the previous administration. There has never been any question about any procurement practices and for this school year under my leadership. Nothing has ever been questioned under my leadership. And so this whole audit process has been to look at years past, over the past several years. And when you ask about why is it taking so long, we know that members of our board have asked for an expansion of the audit over time. So my initial request was to look at technology contracts and those things that were related, procurement related, and especially to some of the technology purchases over the past year. That was the initial request. And members of our board said that isn't enough, so we expanded that to the last 3 years. And then that they kept getting kind of kicked back to, you need to expand. That expansion has then delayed the process. So that's to answer your question about why has it taken so long. So right now, it's in the board's hands. It is not in my hands at all. I'm removed from that process, but the board is handling the audit itself and the procurement of a vendor to actually do the audit.
Verlita White is my guest. She's now the interim superintendent of schools in Baltimore County. You're listening to Midday. I'm Tom Hall. We'll take your calls and comments a little later in the program when I speak with Liz Bowie, the education reporter for the Baltimore Sun. Ms. White's schedule is such that she can only stay with us for another 10 minutes or so, so we will go to the phones a little later in the program. But Ms. White, were you to prevail, if you prevail in this drama, whatever you want to call it, and you are in fact appointed the permanent superintendent, whether it's in the next month or a year from now, is it possible for you to do your job without the sort of full-throated support of the board? The board is clearly split. There seems to be a very well-organized effort on the part of some members of the board, who may or may not still be on the board a year from now, but also members in the community, some of the politicians, representatives in the House of Delegates, Kathy Shalega comes to mind, people who are questioning your whether or not you're the best person for this job. How can you do your job if you don't have this full-throated support of everybody?
Well, and I think I would push back on that just a little bit, because I've received nothing but support and love. There has been an incredible outpouring of love and support and encouragement from thousands of people. The emails, the phone calls, the messages, the voicemail messages that I've received, particularly from those whom I've worked with and those who have followed my work. Sometimes people think that I'm only supported by those who know me. But I would say it's from those who know me and those who have followed my work, who may not know me, and those who see my service. You have to keep in mind that I've been in Baltimore County for quite some time, and I've had the wonderful journey of working with some incredible people, incredible administrators and educators as well, and community members. And so when my service, my whole work and all my entire purpose has been about serving children. And as you do your job over the years, you just continue staying focused on that service. You don't think that people are really noticing. But what I've come to find out over the past couple of weeks is that people did notice, and they have recognized my service. And that's really what it's been about. It's not about the title. It's not about a salary or anything like that. It's about my service. And I just feel blessed and honored to be able to serve the children of Baltimore County and serve the system that educated me. And so when it comes to leading, I can absolutely lead the system. I would say that the board isn't split. I would say that the majority of the board supports me. And they support me because their constituents also support me. And so their constituents have spoken pretty loudly and clearly about the resounding support. Certainly, there will always be some level of opposition. And certainly, I don't want folks around me who will bobblehead me and say yes to every single thing. I think that some opposition is fair, and it's good to make sure that we're being challenged and that make sure that as a system we're constantly growing. I always take exception sometimes to the how. So it's not when we disagree on the what and the why of things. We have expected to be able to defend, you know, the what and the why. I would just want to ask for everyone's kind of indulgence in the how we get there, that we do things respectfully, that we do things with in order, and that we operate collaboratively. And I believe that we can do that. We can hit the reset button, and we can absolutely do that, especially with the majority of the population in full support.
The majority of the population, many of them, most of them, almost all of them, don't serve on the Board of Education. Julie Henn, Ann Miller, and Kathleen Causey do. Now, again, they may or may not serve on the board following this election. But they have gone to really extraordinary measures to see that you're not appointed. They are the ones that went to Dr. Salmon and said, please intervene in this local issue. And generally speaking, local or interference at the state level in local school board policy is really very much out of the norm. Will you just be watching your back all the time if they end up being part of the body that is essentially your boss?
Well, certainly, I think that there would have to be some level setting. Again, I think that those actions are unfortunate, and I wish that they had not taken that route, because I do find that it is not only disrespectful to me, but I think that it is also disrespectful to their fellow board members. And so I think that there would have to be some level setting. I think that we would have to have a collaborative conversation about exactly how to move forward and how to reestablish trust. And that's a very real conversation that would have to occur.
Is one of the ways to move forward and establish trust conducting a somewhat lengthy national search in which you would be one of the candidates? I mean, is that, because there are a lot of people who say, well, the board in early April allocated $75,000 to conduct a search, and 2 weeks later they made the decision to preempt that search and make you the permanent appointment. You mentioned your long connection to the county. Your kids go to school there. You went to school there.
Yes.
You've worked here. Do you think in your mind, and of course, finding the successor to Dallas Dance is not your job. It's the job of the Board of Education. But do you think it would be a step to restore trust if a full national search were done, a bunch of candidates were identified, they were vetted, you would be re-vetted? What would that do?
I would say that previous boards of education have conducted a national search. Not only for the past administration, but for the past couple of administrations. And so I would think that, again, what is it that the board and the public would be looking for? I would think that as if a board member or as just a general member of the community, as a parent, I would want to know, and I'm sure that other parents want to know, you want to know that your leader has gotten results. You would want to know that your leader has, or the instructional leader knows what quality instruction looks like. You would want to know that they have the best interest of children at heart. You would want to know that they're dedicated and that they're invested in Baltimore County and not, you know, kind of fly by night. And so I think that I've proven that. I've been a proven leader in Baltimore County. I have gotten results for the system throughout my career. And I have the work and the background to back that up. So, no, I can't, you know, I'm not going to be able to come in terms of a national search. Someone will come in, they'll interview for a day, and then they will be able to answer some of those questions in a day, but you really don't know because you haven't had a chance to have any real experience with them. Again, that's not to negate the process. That process has value, and I fully support that process if that's the way that the board would like to go. But I would also say, as my mother used to sing an old gospel song, may the work I've done speak for me. And so I continue to say, just take a look at the work that I've done, the children that I've served, the communities that I've served. May the work I've done speak for me. I'm here every day. And so one could say that I've been interviewing every day for the last 10 months. And so, and not beyond the 10 months, for the last 20 years even. There has been a lot of work that has gotten done, a lot of good work for children. And so I'm going to continue to work for children. If search process is the way that the board would like to go, certainly I respect that.
What do you say to the argument that says the makeup of the board clearly is going to change? As you mentioned, and everybody understands, because of this new law that allows county residents to elect 7 of the 12 members of the board. What do you think about the argument that says, at the very least, it's best to let that new board, which will be established in December, make the choice about the next superintendent, whether it's you or somebody else?
Well, I think you have to consider all that a new board would have to get to know and get to learn about the system in addition to choosing a superintendent. It's a lot to undertake. And so any new board members coming on, they don't only have to understand the policies and rules that are in place, that there are board policies that they would have to get up to speed on in terms of the organizational structure. They would have to know that. And they would have to get out to their communities, understand what their constituents want, and to meet the staff and to understand where we are, understand where the data yields and what those results are, in addition to choosing a superintendent. It is a pretty heavy lift. And so I would say for those who have been in the system, those who know the system, those who know where our sore spots are, and those who know where we're doing well, would probably be in the best position at this point in time to choose a superintendent.
I know I have to let you go. I promised that I would, but one more quick question, if you wouldn't mind. You mentioned some of the consequences for your being in an interim status on recruitment or even general instruction with teachers and whatnot. I've talked to all five people running for county executive, both Republicans and Democrats, and the big thing on county voters' minds is school construction. Sure. Delaney High School, Towson High School, Lansdowne High School, and repairs to other buildings. How does the fact, if you are to continue, if it turns out you continue as an interim person for some period of months, how will that affect that particular program? Because that seems to be what's on everybody's mind when it comes to picking a county executive.
Well, the way that I operate, I've operated thus far so that I'm always looking long term, because again, that's where my mind is. I'm thinking of long term, what's best for the system. But I am handcuffed in certain ways, right? So in terms of putting together operating budgets and capital budgets, you're speaking of the capital budget. Again, we can't be short-sighted when it comes to capital projects. We cannot be short-sighted when it comes to the operating budget and those kinds of things that we want to make sure we have long-term gains and long-term investments in 21st century learning environments. So we have to make sure that we have consistency there. For me, it is, as an interim, it is a little bit of a handcuff situation when it would be presumptuous of me to look long-term for some of these things because of the interim status.
Verlita White is the interim superintendent of the Baltimore County Schools. The school board is meeting tonight, and we will continue to follow this very fluid story. Ms. White, thank you for your time.
Thank you, Tom. I very much
appreciate it.
Thank you.
Coming up after a quick break, analysis of the situation in Baltimore County, as well as a look at the troubles facing the Prince George's County school system and a status update on the frankly improving fortunes of Baltimore City schools. Liz Bowie is going to join me. She's an award-winning education reporter at the Baltimore Sun. I'm Tom Hall. You're listening to Midday. Stay with us.
You're listening to your NPR news station, 88.1 WYPR.
And welcome back. It's Midday. I'm Tom Hall. By the way, coming up tomorrow, it's Midday on Theater. Kwame Kwe Arma, the outgoing artistic director of Baltimore Center Stage, will join me, and theater critic J. Wynn Russick. Kwame is leaving Baltimore to become the artistic director of the Young Vic Theater in London. So we'll take a look back at Kwame's tenure here. We'll get a preview of his final show, a musical based on the great soul music artists who recorded for Stax Records. Plus, Judy Russick will review the new show at Baltimore's Single Carrot Theater. That's an LGBTQ+ version of Peter Pan. So that's all coming up tomorrow on Midday. Yesterday, we spent the midday hour with Dr. Sonia Sondalesis, the CEO of the Baltimore City Public Schools. And if you've just joined us today, we're talking about education again. Verlita White, the interim superintendent of the Baltimore County Schools, was my guest for the first part of our show today. And as we mentioned earlier, the county school board is meeting tonight for the next installment in the continuing saga of Ms. White's status as the chief of Maryland's third largest school district, the 25th largest school district in the country. Baltimore County is not alone when it comes to turmoil at the top. For example, enrollment has been slipping in Baltimore City for the past several years. The CEO, Dr. Santelises, was criticized last week by Baltimore City Council President Jack Young for establishing a task force to study the system's enrollment problems. Mr. Young didn't think the task force was inclusive enough. They were scheduled to meet this morning to talk it over in a hearing. WIPR's Dominique Maria Bonesi will have a report on that hearing a little later. And in Prince George's County, Superintendent Kevin Maxwell, handpicked for that position by County Executive Rashern Baker, has been forced out following a series of scandals involving grade changing and large salary increases for executive staff members. Rashern Baker is running in the Democratic primary for governor. He's been criticized by his opponents in that race and Governor Hogan for not firing Maxwell months ago. So Liz Bowie is here to help us sort some of this stuff out. She's an award-winning education reporter for the Baltimore Sun. Liz, it's good to see you.
Good to see you, Tom.
And we will try to take some of your calls and questions and comments. Our number here at Midday, 410-662-8780. Our email, midday@wipr.org. Our Twitter handle, @MiddayWIPR. And we are still streaming on the WIPR Facebook page. So, Liz, let's talk a little bit about Baltimore County. Any general reaction to what Ms. White had to say earlier in our show today?
I don't think that there was much surprising in terms of what she said. I was interested in the degree to which she believes that she is a bit handcuffed by being a interim superintendent, that she doesn't have the same leeway to make broad decisions that she would have if she was a permanent superintendent.
Why do you think the Board of Education in Baltimore County decided to abandon the search process? They did, as I mentioned, allocate, I think, $75,000 for a search. A national search is certainly something that's kind of de rigueur in situations like this. She had been the chief academic officer, Ms. White, and she was certainly a viable candidate for the job. But why not go ahead and, look nationally the way they looked when they hired Dr. Dance, as well as several other previous superintendents? Why do you think they decided to change course?
I think a very divided school board was just tripping over itself, basically. Most school systems start searches in November, December, January at the latest for a new school superintendent because it takes months. And they dilly-dallied around. I think the majority of the board wanted to appoint Verlita White to be the next superintendent, so they weren't particularly worried about a search. Then all these questions came out about her ethics, and then there was an ethics review panel investigation, and I think then the minority of the board actually refused to sign off on the firm that was going to do the first national search, because that was the same firm that had chosen Dallas Dance. So then they put out the bids again, and all of this took longer and longer and longer. And as they dragged their feet, a divided board dragged their feet, they got to the point where it was really too late to do a national search. I mean, the idea that you could start a national search in April is sort of ludicrous in the education community.
Yeah, too late unless you're happy with having another interim,
right?
Having Ms. White serve as an interim for a whole other year, basically.
But you should understand that Maryland is very clear about there are legal requirements, and you have to have a contract that goes from July 1 to June 30th, no other time period. And it's really rare for the state superintendent to agree to 2 years of the same interim. They don't like to do that in Maryland. So they were really under the gun.
That's interesting. So that, for example, if someone suggests that the board extend Verlita White's interim status, say, through January, when there's then a new board in place, they're not legally able
they can't
to
do that.
They have to extend to June 30th.
Yes, she has to get another year.
And that would be virtually unheard of. I mean,
yes, it's very rare.
Because that would be her second full year.
Right. And in fact, the president of the board had told me that he understood through back channels that, in fact, the state superintendent wouldn't approve another year of interim at Verlita White as the interim.
You were the person who broke the story about Verlita White's ethical concerns, the concerns that people had about her ethics in terms of what she reported and didn't report on her disclosure forms. You also certainly reported about Dallas Dance and his ethical violations. There are people who oppose Verlita White as the permanent superintendent in Baltimore County who are trying to draw a parallel between what Dallas Dance did and what Verlita White has done. In your opinion, as a person who studies education in general and these two cases in particular, are they birds of a feather?
No, I don't think they are birds of a feather. I think, and I've tried to make that clear in many of the things that I've written, but basically Dallas Dance hid $147,000 from the school board. And even when he was caught, he lied again about it. And not only did he lie repeatedly and hide the payments that were very significant from Supes Academy, he also created fake documents.
And Supes Academy is a different company than the one that Ms. White was involved in.
He essentially is in prison today because of Supes Academy.
And what exactly did he do with Supes Academy? Just to remind folks.
He, as soon as he became superintendent, Supes started lobbying him to get a contract with the school system. He gave them a contract. It was a piggyback contract, so it didn't go out to bid. And then they started giving him jobs. And he earned $90,000 on the side in the first year after that contract went through. He was not convicted or charged with bribery. But the fact of the matter is he lied about that relationship.
And this has nothing that Ms. White did even approaches that level of nefariousness.
No. She did not fill out her forms correctly, and she said it was a mistake. She didn't understand the instructions. There is some way in which you can read the documents to say that they're somewhat confusing. Many people have pointed out, however, that wouldn't you take great care with those forms when your boss is being getting ethics violations because of that exact same thing?
What about the school of thought that says Verlita White is not the person for the job at this moment because of her relationship with Dallas Dance? I mean, she was the chief academic officer during Dr. Dance's tenure, and that the two of them were just too, they were personally close. What do you make of that?
I think it's kind of curious that the current board and Verlita White have not distanced themselves more from the whole Dallas Dance situation. There was no great cries of outrage or we're going to take action to clean house or any of that. I don't know why. I think that, you know, the board might have more credibility right now with the public if they had done that. But I think that there's a lot of concern from, you know, different camps about now how close Verlita was to Dance.
We have a caller who's not on the line but makes a comment that I've heard from a lot of folks, which is why allow this lame duck board, which is essentially what it is, because there will be this election in November and a whole new makeup of the board by December. This is the same group that did fail in its oversight of Dr. Dance. This was all happening right under their noses. Why should we allow them to make a four-year appointment for the next permanent superintendent? Wouldn't that alone be reason to delay this process for another year?
I think you can make a really good argument from that standpoint. There's no guarantee, however, that the next board isn't going to be just as divided over the issue. I think you could also argue that, you know, having another interim for a year just slows down the process of making good decisions at the top.
Yeah, because even if Verlita White is a candidate for the job, she couldn't serve as the interim superintendent. She would, I suppose, maybe go back to doing something else in the county or something. Who knows?
Right. I mean, I guess
you would just have more upheaval. You would have a different interim.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. Interesting. All right. Let's take a break. And when we come back, we'll talk a little bit perhaps about Baltimore City and maybe even Prince George's County. More with Baltimore Sun education reporter Liz Bowie. When we do come back, our phone number here on Midday, 410-662-8780. Our email, midday@wipr.org. Our Twitter handle, @MiddayWIPR. If you want to follow me on Twitter, that's certainly welcome. I'm @TomHallWIPR. And we are streaming on the WIPR Facebook page. Stay with us.
This is your public radio, 88.1 WYPR.
Welcome back. It's Midday. I'm Tom Hall. If you've just joined us, we're talking about issues in local education on this edition of Midday. Liz Bowie covers education for the Baltimore Sun. She's with me here in the studio. You are welcome to join us, 410-662-8780, our email midday@wipr.org, to find us in the Twittersphere @MiddayWIPR, and you can follow us on the WIPR Facebook page where we are streaming as we speak. Liz, a couple of emails. There's a guy named John who says the contract for the devices and Miss White's support of Dance's decision and ties to the contractor should disqualify her. The devices, I guess, have to do with this stuff that the county was buying. Teachers and parents across the board did not agree with her appointment. He writes back. He says, Miss White knew Dr. Dance was often absent and was freelancing. How does she account for her silence and taking funds from one of the companies? It screams cover up. Why didn't she come forward? And then Matt from Catonsville says, as a parent of children in Baltimore County Schools, I believe the newly elected school board rather than the current appointed board should make this choice, especially given her controversial impropriety after a national search and a forensic audit on all procurement processes. The pushback by some members of the school board on an audit make me think that Dr. Dance and Miss White may be the tip of the iceberg. So there is a trust and credibility problem. Miss White says, you know, she's been shown a whole lot of love and that she's gotten a lot of support. How do you gauge the level of community support and internal support among people who work for the county, either as teachers or administrators, versus this very stringent opposition, which clearly has made its feelings known through this process? Where do you put those two sides?
I think that there is an outpouring of support for her in among administrators and principals and a lot of people throughout the community. But I think that is largely because in some ways the school system is really tired of upheaval and they just know her and trust her and just want things to calm down. And on the other side, I think that there is a level of concern about, you know, what else is out there. I mean, we, you know, I think the taxpayers have a right to know, did this go any further? Dance was there for 5 years. If he was doing things that weren't right in one sphere, why not in another? I mean, we don't know without that audit.
And can you find out that information if Verlita White is the superintendent? I mean, couldn't that audit and couldn't that information be gained? Couldn't that information be known if Verlita White were the superintendent? Is there anything about Verlita White's being in that position that would in some way attenuate the capacity of finding out that information about Dallas Dance?
I don't see how it would if you're doing a forensic audit. I don't think she would block an audit.
She claims, of course, that, you know, yeah, she herself who suggested an audit in the first place. Let's see if we can sneak in a couple of calls here. Sharon in Owings Mills, welcome to Midday with Liz Bowie.
Hello. I'm one of those people that has come to the almost every single school board meeting this school year and a lot of them last year. And there has been a lot of back and forth, and we need some stability in the county, someone who understands that the teachers need the support, that we need more teachers in the schoolhouse. And Varlita does understand that, and she has put, I believe it's 50 more teachers into the budget for next year to start looking at the problems that the county is really facing which is special ed and gifted and talented education. You can't look at those problems and solve those problems if you don't have enough staff. So that's a positive thing about her. Concerning that audit, yes, she is very much for that audit. It's the school board members that are divided and are doing a lot of pushback.
All right. Well, Sharon, thank you for that call. I appreciate it. Ms. White has her detractors and her supporters. Sharon, obviously, person very involved, goes to all the meetings, a supporter there. I wonder if Verlita White is for some reason, and there are a bunch of reasons that this could happen, not appointed the next superintendent as of July 1st. I wonder what that does to whoever they hire. I mean, if they hire someone other than Verlita White, I mean, it certainly raises the possibility that that person will come in with a whole segment of the community against him or her.
I think you're right. And I really don't foresee that happening. I think what will happen tonight is that a number of the board members will suggest that they're going to push back a bit, very politely, against Karen Salmon's decision, and then expecting her, you know, I think it's extremely unlikely she's going to change her mind, but I think they're annoyed and they're going to push back. And then in 2 weeks, they will appoint her interim superintendent.
Oscar in Chestnut Ridge, welcome to Midday with Liz Bowie. Thanks for your call.
Right. I'm really perturbed by this whole thing. When I read about her not being able to put what she's supposed to do on her list, which is required, you know, I couldn't understand that. Here's her predecessor who's gone to jail because he didn't put it on, and here she is with $12,000 or $13,000 that should have been recorded. She didn't understand it. She said she couldn't understand it just now. I don't believe that. She's the educator of the whole county. And she doesn't understand how to fill it out.
All right. Well, thank you for that call, Oscar. I appreciate it. Now, Liz, I read the Ethics Committee's report, as I'm sure you have, and they quote the language on the disclosure form. And I got to tell you now, given the fact that I'm a dweeb and a dope, I did not understand it, you know, but because it kind of like makes your tax form, your IRS form look like the most comprehensible, understandable document you've ever read. This is very thick, very weird language that concerns salary as opposed to fees and whether you
right.
own the company and all that kind of stuff. So I have to say that I am somewhat sympathetic with anybody who has to fill these things out in terms of actually understanding the verbiage that you are confronted with. On the other hand, I think Oscar makes a good point. If you're making money outside of your gig, why don't you tell somebody about it in
right.
some way?
Right. Or why don't you go to the attorney, the school system's attorney, and say, I'm making this money. Do I need to report this somewhere?
Yeah. Now she's reporting the flowers that are coming in. So I suppose that's if anything else, it makes the office smell nice. So that's good. People should know about that. Let's talk a little bit about Baltimore City. I had Dr. Sonalisis here on the show yesterday, and there is this little kerfluffle, and I'm purposely describing it as little. I'm not sure it's a big kerfluffle about this enrollment task force. Clearly, the city has enrollment problems. The enrollment keeps going down.
Right.
And right now the formula for funding is keyed to the number of bodies they've got in seats. So if there's fewer bodies, fewer bucks, and that's a problem. But Jack Young, the president of the city council here in Baltimore, seems to have taken exception with the fact that Dr. Sonalisis has appointed this committee, this task force, without input from various communities, the Latino community, the African-American community. What do you make of that?
I mean, I guess he has a point. However, there are lots of committees that are school system committees that aren't necessarily, open to the public all the time. It's just work that gets done behind the scenes. I don't know whether I'm sure, you know, it would be better to have a broad base of people from the community to look at this issue. It is a really serious issue for the school system because they have too much space in their buildings, and so it's really expensive for them to have fewer and fewer kids.
there's other than that, there's some pretty good news for the Baltimore City schools when it comes to money. I mean, last year at this time, Dr. Sonalesis is saying we're looking at maybe 1,000 people being laid off. This year, she's submitted a budget, $1.3 billion, with no teacher layoffs and some expansion of certain programs like literacy coaching.
And she's hired 50 new people. They were laying off 151 last year. She seems to have been able to stabilize the financial situation, which has always been rocky in the school system. So I think that that's a really positive move. However, the charter schools have gotten less per pupil, and so they're quite concerned.
How important is that, this charter school thing? Will the impact on these various charter schools, and as Dr. Sonalesis was quick to point out, that we have more charter schools here in Baltimore than almost anywhere else. Is that really going to be a huge dent, or is this something they're going to be able to absorb?
They say it's not. I think it's hard to tell. They're going to have a significant cut. And they've been complaining, and there's a lawsuit that they brought. So this has been an ongoing issue. I think it's going to become more serious in the next year.
We didn't get a chance to talk about Kevin Maxwell, who's resigning as the leader of the Prince George's County Schools. Although, listeners, Rashern Baker, candidate for governor, the person who hired Mr. Maxwell, will be my guest here on Friday this week. So, Liz Bowie, thanks so much for your time. I appreciate it. We look forward to your continued reporting.
Thank you.
Liz Bowie covers education for the Baltimore Sun and wins awards doing it. We've got a link to her report on our website, her reporting, all of her reporting, WIPR.org/midday. That's it for us today. Coming up tomorrow, a conversation with Kwame Kwe Arma, who's leaving Baltimore after 7 years as the artistic director of Baltimore Center Stage. He's been appointed the new chief of the Young Vic Theater in London. He's about to open his final show at Center Stage, Soul, the Stax musical. We'll also have a review of the new show at Single Carrot Theater with our theater critic, J. Wynn Russick. Thanks to Joe Square for providing lunch today. Joe Square serves cold-fired pizzas, risotto, and local craft beers. Locations and hours at joesquared.com. Out of the Blocks is up next after a break for news at the top of the hour. And after that, Here and Now, we'll have live coverage of President Trump's announcement of his decision on the Iran nuclear deal. That starts at 2 o'clock, so stay with us. For the entire Midday team, I'm Tom Hall. Thanks for listening. Have a great day.